Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen.
The Donald on a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
You have the great good fortune of being listening to KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. I want to thank everybody who participated in either being there or more of you were listening on air and over the internet. There was a fundraiser for KHOI this last Labor Day weekend, which was yesterday, Labor Day on Monday. And there was a concert. There was a three-hour concert on a porch in downtown Ames at the residence of Paul Nelson. He was a much missed around here, and we thought we'd have a concert kind of in his honor and to support KHOI. Thank you to the Barn Owl Band, who showed up in fine form and played for 3 hours. Those people have got strong fingers, I say, and there was proper social distancing. We were all spread out around the yard, around into the street, and the band all had masks on. And yes, you can play old-time dance music without having your face showing. And even when they sang, it was just fine. It was just fine. So thanks to the Barn Owl Band. Thanks all of you who participated in that fundraiser. And you can go to khoifm.org to find out more, because the on-air fundraiser is ongoing. That'll be on Facebook. So goodbye to summer, Donna. Goodbye.
Oh, man, we had a big temperature drop from yesterday to today, and it's positively autumnal right now.
It's one of those days when you have to say, now, where exactly did I put that sweater? We were wearing shorts and T-shirts, and here we are, and I have a sweatshirt on today. I'll have you know. It is cool, and it is supposed to be cool all week.
I might light the wood fire tonight.
Oh, good for you. Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, time to think of that sort of thing. I have a short Donna Lana Kitchen news item here. I noticed on the internet where, you know, you pick up all sorts of kind of things, despite the mayhem that's going on, the pandemic, the all sorts of nasty things going on, here's some news about goats. It seems a police officer in a small town in Georgia responded to a call for help, and she parked her car and got out, and it was a rural community, and she said she always leaves her door ajar just in case she has to quick jump back in, because you never know, there might be dogs or whoever that wouldn't like her. But she went and did her job. When she came back, there was a goat in her car, and goats being goats, this goat was eating all of her official police paperwork. So the goat ate a lot of paper. By the time they finally got the goat out of the police car, the goat was upset with everything and knocked the police person for a loop, and she ended up on her butt. And that was the end of it. But still, it's kind of nice to know that in spite of everything, goats are still goats. So watch out. Be careful out there.
Well, we better teach those goats that blue lives matter.
Oh, yeah. Don't be knocking over police people. There we go. Oh, so today, I'm going to take kind of a broad view as to what's happening around here. There's all kinds of fires and climate change and wind and there's
snow.
Snow in Colorado. There's all
in
kinds
Colorado,
of
Colorado, not in Iowa.
But it's cold here. So many things are going on. And we talk about food here. We talk about feeding people. We have a special guest today, and this person knows how to feed a crowd. She is in California right now and has a lot to say about what our current emergencies are doing to our lives as we know it. Now, to introduce our guest.
Yeah, so joining us today is Nancy Keller, who is the Culinary Service Director at Sonoma State University in Santa Rosa, California. Nancy was formerly the ISU Dining Director, so she knows a lot about what goes on in our system here in Ames, as well as what goes on in California. Nancy, hello.
Hello from California, from smoky California.
Yeah, and tell us how hot it is there today.
Well, today we're in the 70s. We'll probably go up to about the 90s, but it is a dry heat, so it's a lot different than what you experience.
It's a dry heat. There you go. Well, there's a lot of fires going on, and lots of smoke, and lots of things to look about and keep track of. So, what do you do at your current job, and why is it not the same as what you expected it to be? What's going on?
Well, our campus is a little bit reduced, is what I would call it. Normally, we would have about 9,000 students on the campus, with approximately 3,400 living on campus. With the COVID change and the chancellor's office announcing quite early in all of this pandemic that our campuses would be virtual, we actually took a hard look at what really our campuses were going to need, and our housing people looked at what we would do as well. So
you had good warning rather than this last minute, we don't know what we're doing, right?
Well, you know, I would say that we pivoted a lot as to what does virtual really look like? We had to determine what we would open, what we wouldn't open, should we open? And so those discussions did go on internally, and we took a look at a hard look. And I heard my peers talking about expanding the services to try to give people more space to serve. I'm lucky in that our campus was overbuilt and that we knew that we would be somewhere under 1,200 on campus, which actually turned in reality to 400. We are graciously having apartments that have kitchens. And so that makes it very convenient for our students so they can cook their own meals, as instead of having a dorm style residence hall for them, where it's very difficult for them to do that. So we were able to actually close down all of the facilities, and that has made it, and again, the priority for our campus has been the safety of the students that are here and the safety of our employees. And so with those two as the priority, you make decisions that, in my opinion, I was embarrassed actually, because all my peers were talking about being open and doing all these things, and I just basically said, well, we're not going to be open. We're going to let students cook their own meals. We'll teach cooking classes. But and now all of them are pivoting to try to catch up to what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that the UC systems were one of the first in the nation to just point blank say, we're not doing this in the fall. So
they didn't want that.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the reasons we're having this conversation on the radio is because food service and food systems all over the country have been disrupted. We've talked a lot about restaurants. There's quite a bit about restaurants in the news, but what people aren't thinking about is in the universities, they have very large food systems. Now, it's bad enough if you have to open and close a restaurant really quickly where you're used to serving even 100 people a night. With these large food service systems like Nancy is in, or like ISU has, this is like, you can't turn on a dime, you know?
Well,
you've got lots and lots of provisions. You've got so much planning. You've got huge staff. It's complicated. So, and especially, fortunately, Nancy doesn't have to do this, but a lot of the universities, you know, it was, okay, we're going to open up, get ready, get all the food ordered. We're going to do this. And then, oops, no, maybe we're not. And then, oops, maybe half of their, percentage of the kids are in quarantine, and how do we feed them? And oops, and oops, and oops. And it is just, I mean, you must be hearing amazing stories from your industry peers.
I really am. And it's interesting because a school like Yale made all students sign a waiver saying that if you do not follow all of these social distancing rules, you will be expelled.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. So they're taking it very seriously, and they are not having the issues that some of the other schools were having. And part of that was someone said, well, yeah, we're a state school, and we're not getting that sort of support from administration with some of the other schools. And you know, every region is different because of your counties, the ones that are telling you what to do, right? Mm-hmm. Or your governor. And so and then you get down to your campus administration and what their philosophy is. And, you know, sometimes food service reports to student affairs, which also has housing reporting to it. And then sometimes food service or culinary services reports to business administration or administrative finance. So there's a little pull as to whether you're focused on the numbers and the bottom line or whether you're focused on taking care of the students. And that kind of goes back and forth depending on the administration.
Well, how is ISU's administration done?
It reports to student affairs.
Okay. But the food service at ISU was an income generator for the university, correct?
Correct. And it also is self-funded. So it covers all of any buildings and things like that it does. And in conjunction with housing.
Yeah. Oof, it's complicated. So what are some of the things that you've experienced, even though you're not feeding students, what else are you doing?
Well, we've done a few things, only because as you talked about, we had a lot of food. We actually went into the COVID right before the close of spring break. And we were extremely grateful because we actually had dialed back a little bit, but we weren't sure when we were going to open back up, because when they shut us down, it was about Wednesday of spring break. So at that point, we had a good amount of food in our facilities. And what I did is I pulled all, because we have 11 restaurants on the campus, I pulled that food back into the main base kitchen so that we would utilize it as efficiently as possible. And we fed the students that were left, and we created menus from what foods we had, which helped us utilize some of that food. Not all of it, but some of it. Also, you don't know what the counts are going to be. They're saying there's 400 in the residence halls, and then 43 show up because the students were afraid to go outside.
Oh,
and so we did that for a little while. And as I shared with you when we talked, we put our team on, because we have a lot of staff, we put our team on an A, B, and C team, and they rotated through so that if someone did get COVID, they would not quarantine the whole dining program. What we would do is actually have one team that would sit out for 2 weeks and then be able to come back without it affecting us being able to serve our students. So then when the students, right before the students left, we were asked if we would serve, they wanted to use our campus, since we weren't going to have any summer conferencing, to create what they call an alternative care site. And that alternative care site got set up in our gym for people that could not be in a hospital because they had COVID folks in there, and they were moving those people that would maybe need minor attention to our rec center. Then we also put quarantined folks or self-quarantined folks in our dorms that were not being used. So one of the things that
came out
was they brought all the homeless in.
Amazing.
Because the homeless needed to get off the streets, mm-hmm. and it was very difficult for them to self-quarantine. So they were in one section, and then we had another section that was quarantined people with COVID. So luckily we had these facilities that we could utilize and take care of people. And then what we did is we fed the doctors and nurses and the security for the alternative care sites. They contracted out with a catering company on the outside to come in and do the meals for the people actually living in the rooms.
The sort of hospital and the homeless people, as COVID keeps going on and on and on, then what happened?
So then there was talk about getting ready for school, and the contract had to end. And so the county found some other areas for folks to go. But the whole time that they were there, Catholic Charities and a couple other, like Salvation Army, Red Cross, were all assisting in trying to get people, these homeless folks, somewhere to stay. And so they were working through that. So then we were, they all moved out. We all did super cleaning of the facilities and then got ready for potentially opening up for the students. And what we actually looked at, Donna, was we thought there might be 1,200 people on campus. So we took our largest dining hall and looked at converting it to a declining balance, completely changing the all-you-care-to-eat meal. But each platform in those dining halls would have a register at it so that we could socially space everyone and they could come in. At the last minute, which was 2 weeks before school would start, we found out that the housing number was 400, which was easily put into rooms that have kitchens. And so the campus determined at that point that we would not open. So I did have a little bit of a late pivot. And at that point, about 2 weeks later is when the fires started. And so we actually opened up to the Red Cross with the county and put evacuees into homes. So we had seniors and families come and live in our residence halls so that they had somewhere to be. And we did the meals for them. But those were all pretty much packaged up, brought over cold to one location by where they were staying. And that food was dispersed by the Red Cross.
And right, but you still had to cook it and buy the food and do all
yes,
that.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And with limited staff at that point, because we had done some staff layoffs.
Well, now talking about staff, mm-hmm. how have you managed your staff? Because, you know, you had some trained staff there.
Yes, we do. We actually have 37 full-time people. We had 15 managers. And so what we did is we originally, the state of California gave us what they call a CPAL program. But we were still feeding people. So I was rotating people. And in the off weeks, I had them telecommuting and they were getting paid. So some interesting things. I mean, people were watching cooking cooking shows and then doing those meals with their children, which is a lot of times the same as teaching a student how to cook, right? So it was a good experience for them. They got to do a few other things. One of them learned a lot more about foraging and got a picture of this app on their phone and went around on hikes, seeing what foods could actually be eaten and what they could do with them. So a few other things. Then it came down to the alternative care site closing. And at that point, they weren't sure how many people we were going to need for the opening of school because it was reduced when you go from 11 to one operation. So mm-hmm. we were actually talking about a reduction in staff because of lack of work. And so we actually gave a layoff notice to all of our employees and then started working on where else could they work to support the campus. So 12 of our of the 37 actually got jobs working in custodial. And food service people are very good at sanitation.
Cleaning.
So it was a great transition for them. And they have been enjoying it going around and they're used to working crazy hours as well. So it was a nice transition for quite a few of them. And then, I forgot to mention that one of the things that the state of California also did was anybody over 65 was not required to come to work. So we did have a few of those folks on our team that just, were getting paid on admin leave the whole time of COVID. In bringing everybody back for the layoff, they were given 90 days notice of the layoff and we'll have insurance through December. Our managers that were laid off were giving 90 days severance pay and had insurance through the end of August. So that's kind of what's going on. We are keeping in touch. I am doing a town hall meeting every 2 weeks with everyone of our team, whether you be working in custodial, whether you're laid off or not, they're all getting paid through this time. And they're just kind of, if anything, I want to do an upbeat and keep in touch with all of them and see what's going on. Probably about five of them have found jobs and we will see what happens, you know, from this point on. There is a committee right now on our campus talking about the future and what we will do.
Future? What are you, they got a crystal ball out there or something?
Well, they don't really have a crystal ball, but what they want to do is have plan A, B, and C, which is what we did way back in March again. Mm-hmm. And pretty much the big conversation is, in order for us to open up and not be virtual, it is believed that we will be told, until there is a vaccine that is available to all, we will remain in a virtual mode. And our summers, so if that takes us all the way to May and us not being open and being virtual, we will continue to do some cooking classes. I'm doing menu planning training for students. I'm revisioning our program because we will have to do what I hate saying it, but the new norm. On what we will be doing, because salad bars are pretty much obsolete, but people aren't going to want to give up those salads and things like that, because that's where we get our local products, right?
Mm-hmm. My goodness. We're talking to Nancy Keller, and Nancy Keller is a culinary supervisor director for a campus in California. And although the students are there, well, there are many of them, there seems to be a lot of other people you ended up cooking for. You are obviously expert at feeding a crowd. You said one of the people that you, one of the groups you cooked for are first responders, they're firefighters. Everybody needs to eat. And this time of challenging pandemics and challenging fires, there's a lot of things that need to kind of be done in a different way. We're going to take a small break here, and I want to remind you, this is KHOI Community Radio. We will be back to talk more. And this is the Dunalana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Dunalana Kitchen. We are talking to Nancy Keller about the trials, tribulations, and the challenge of our times when you have to feed a crowd, when you have to feed university students and other big bunches of people during these pandemic, fire, climate change times. How in the world does one do it? Nancy, you did a good job of telling about how you changed gears, because we don't quite know, is the university open, is the university shut? And that, how in the world can you possibly have your food supply ready? Because one of the first things that happened when a pandemic hit, producers, farmers knew that big buyers were sometimes not even an option anymore. What in the world is going on?
Well, you know what? I have to say that probably the key word is flexibility. We had to learn how to be able to adapt. And luckily, I've been doing this for 30 years. So I'm one of those people, like my executive chef, that can walk in the cooler and go, okay, I got this, 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 this. Oh, I can make ratatouille. So that's one of the things that happened. And we tried really hard to make sure that we did not waste food. That was a critical component for us. So one of the things that we did is did the cooler and the freezer walk, starting with the cooler and utilizing the products that we knew would not hold as well. And then that way we could reduce the amount of purchasing that we were doing as well, because we did give students that were on the meal plan in March and April and May, we gave them a refund. So a lot of the revenue that we would have had was gone as well. So the goal was to make sure that we managed it as efficiently as possible. As we went into the summer, we adapted menus for the alternative care site, and those needed to be things that were easily grab and go for them. But we wanted to make it nice. These people deserve not just a burger. So we were making, and we had a lot of special diets. So vegetarian, vegan. So we were adapting through that. So we made a beautiful caprese sandwich, because we had tomatoes and we had some mozzarella cheese. And so that was something on a nice ciabatta bun that was a great product for them, and highly desirable. And you have to adapt each time. As we opened up in for the fire evacuees, one of the things that we had was we had people with peanut allergies and all of that, which we deal with day in and day out with our students. So we know how to turn and adapt a menu. But it was really important to make sure that everything was labeled, because it was going to someone else to disperse. But when we were doing the alternative care site, we actually, for our students, did it inside one building. And I think I should have invested in either painter's tape or masking tape right as COVID came in, because I got tape all over all my floors to keep people socially distanced until we could get signage made. So you got to have a little fun with it, but we did blue tape because we're the SSU. So painter's tape worked well, but it comes off way too easy. So we ended up going back to some of the heavier tapes. But the meals themselves really were, I heard from my peers that some of the students are not happy with them out there, not mine, but what they're doing, because obviously if you go from a dining hall where they can go in and choose 23 to 30 items, and now all of a sudden you got a choice of three things that you order on Grubhub and can come pick up. We were throwing we had a bunch of candy from our C store. So we were throwing a thing of candy or granola bars and things like that into it to liven it up and to give them a little bit of fun instead of just getting the same thing. And we went to a 2-week cycle instead of it being a 4-week cycle. So some of those adaptions you do to try and keep some variety for them, because Lord, they don't want the same food every single day.
Did you have trouble sourcing?
Sourcing was entertaining. We actually had time, which I'm grateful for, to call and ask questions for some of, like, the alternative care site and the evacuees. We actually could call and say, do you have this product? So we did not put things on the menu that would have been a problem, but there were things that we normally would use. And there are things that we are buying that we normally wouldn't buy. We were buying a lot more convenience items because I didn't have as many people to help make the food, because they had all gone to wiping counters and doorknobs and all these other things on the campus. So it was a different menu than usual. And we were trying to adapt to what we had, but produce was okay. You may have gotten tomatoes that were 6x6 and now you're getting Romas instead and you're adapting. So it was one of those types of things. But I don't think that I had as many issues. I do believe a lot of other campuses, when I was talking with them, did some hoarding to be prepared for fall. And with these pivots that are going on, I think they're going to be not having as much fun of what's going on. Also, the other thing that we do get to do here is the PG&E brownouts and power outages that are planned. And so we did have a problem with one of our freezers that we did have a little bit of waste, which was disappointing because we have generators on all of our coolers and freezers, but the issue was not that, it was Freon. And with it going up and down, our freezer got to 35, so we lost the product in our freezer. Luckily, it wasn't a full, it was the opening weekend of school, and luckily it wasn't full of food because we have been using up everything that was in there, but not a good thing.
Well, but when we they did have those brownouts, are they scheduled so you know when they're coming?
Sometimes. That week we had a maintenance scheduled for that weekend. And we thought that that's what was going to happen. And then for some reason on Monday before that Friday, everything went down. It went down for about 5 hours. So then it came back up and then it went down for the 8 hours that were planned that Saturday. And then that, and that was through facilities on campus here. And then it didn't come back up was the problem. They came in and checked, the temperature did not come back up. And so it got to 35, but normally we know. And what we do at that point is we pull out our food truck because we have a food truck that is run off of propane and we have a water tank in it. And so we, last year during the fires, we actually pulled our food truck to an off-campus apartment complex and fed people there.
Boy, at least you got some equipment.
Yes, we do. I am very grateful for that.
Oh, goodness.
Well, so tell me about teaching the students to cook. That must be what it's on. It's all remote, right?
So correct. The four managers that are left out of our management team, each of us have taken different things to do. I do menu planning and I'm doing also budgeting with the students. And then our chefs are doing some different recipes for them, some of their favorites so that they remember that we're here and they can still have those items that they enjoyed having while we were serving food. And then we also do some coffee drinks and things like that. So we've been having a little bit of fun with it. And the group has enjoyed me talking about how to save money and buy a pound and a half of ground beef, divide it up into different amounts, make tacos out of it, make a hamburger patty, make meatballs, make, and then you can make a taco salad. So if you double the taco, or you can make chili. So that's part of what I do. And then with the chicken, you can do the same thing. And then I talk about whether they can, if they have a freezer or not, or how much variety they want in their lives. And just have a little bit of fun in helping them not do what doesn't help them budget, which is, oh, I'm hungry, I'm going to go to the store, or I'm going to order on Instacart and go crazy, and mom's going to scream at me later, or I'm going to run over to a fast food place and get food. So this allows them to eat the things that they like and and in most cases, get a fresher product than they would potentially get somewhere else.
And learn new things. You said that students are in, this is great, students are in dorms that have kitchens. Are they pretty well-equipped kitchens, or are you dealing with a hot plate?
Oh, no, they don't have hot plates, which is what I'm used to. And then you're taking your coffee pot and boiling water and throwing a vegetable in it, right?
Yeah, I remember dorms. Yeah, okay.
I've actually taught students that had rooms where they didn't have kitchens that you take two slices of bread, put cheese on it, turn the toaster on its side, shove it in there, let the cheese melt, and then pull it out and put the two together. So, and I've done eggs in baggies and all kinds of stuff. So you never know what they have to work with. But in this case, they have full kitchens. But I do try to stick and talk with my chefs about sticking to maybe one to two pots or pans, because they don't tend to have a plethora of equipment to work with. So it's really, we did in the fall, last year, we actually did some knife skills for all of our employees, and we normally hire 400 students. So we gave 400 students those skills that they could learn how to use a knife appropriately and take that out into the world with them. So we try to give our students that work for us life skills as well.
So they're getting an education at university. Yay. All right. And what kind of feedback are you getting? What are the funniest? Do they have questions? Do they report
well,
back their
results? You know, it's interesting because with the internet, more and more students actually have questions that are telling you something they know, so they feel good. But one of them was interesting. The health center actually asked us to do a class on avocado toast because so many students were taking the avocado and cutting it in their hand and cutting themselves. And so they said, could you teach them how to do it without cutting themselves? And so we did a class on that. But what was funnier to me was in talking about it, we talked about cutting a jalapeno and not touching your face after you cut a jalapeno. And one of the gals shared that if you touched your eye, and I had never heard this, so you can always learn, right? You can always learn something. And her family taught her that if you got avocado in your eye and it was watering, to take the ends of your hair and swipe it from jalapeno juice, the oil. And so you would take your hair and swipe it across your eye, and the hair would actually absorb the oil and it stopped and it worked.
No.
Yes. I could not believe it. I had to try it.
I love these tips. What a tip. Your hair?
Your hair. And you just take the ends of your hair and swipe it across your eye, which hurts a little bit, but stops that oil from burning. Crazy.
Of course, you have to have long hair to do that.
Yes, you do. Someone else's hair.
Oh, yeah. It is handy.
Oh, good trick. Oh boy. Well, that's our tip for today. How to get rid of jalapeno heat if you've rubbed your eye. That's a very, it happens.
Yeah,
it does happen.
You do that once. I'm interested in making all this food for all these different people. Now, people have different needs for what they're going to have to eat. What do you make for firefighters?
Well, you know, I would tell you that they're looking for protein and carbs. And so you focus on that for them and make sure that they keep up. It was interesting when we were doing the nurses as well, they were going after caffeine. Any tea beverage that we had or we don't do Red Bull, but Rockstar and some of these others were all just flying when we had beverages because we let them pick a beverage. So that was pretty funny.
Oh. Right. Well, they must have been working long shifts.
They do.
Yeah.
I assume there is a whole other cadre of people that deliver all this stuff.
The alternative care site, they actually came in because they wanted to get out of the area for a little bit. But when we delivered, we actually, the managers, we delivered because we wanted to make sure that whoever was going into the Red Cross recovery area is what they called it for the fire evacuees. We kept that to a minimum of how many people were going over there. So us as managers took that on. The staff got the bags together. We refrigerated them. We loaded them to the van and then we took them over.
Oh, goodness. Well, talk about sustainability and packaging and what are you doing?
It's been crazy. I mean, I think that was the one thing that everyone struggled with in the beginning is there going to be enough packaging out there? Yeah, you're worried about food, but it was really the packaging of all these products. Can you get all those PCs or portion control units of dressing and ketchup and mustard and all of those things that go with all the food so that people can adapt it to the way they want it? And it was a lot of paper bags. And that's the one thing that's harder than bananas to get is a bag with a handle.
Oh, really?
Because that's the choice for delivery. And then because people really like those. And then you have to, of course, seal that up as well. So you got to find stickers. Luckily, we just used our food stickers. So it would say what things were, but that wasn't what was in the bag. but we could at least seal up the bag.
Well, you always have that masking tape that you use on the
floor. Oh, yeah. But masking tape doesn't work so hot when you start packaging all of that, you know, 200 lunches to go to somebody.
It doesn't stick very well.
Especially if you put it in the fridge. It comes off.
That's true.
For goodness sakes.
It's quite a thing.
But sustainability, really, the other thing is that people are asking where their food is coming from, which has always supported sustainability in the past. And now it's a little bit more of, well, how did it get here? You know, I can't say that some guy from his farm drove it over in his truck and sold it to me from a plastic bin any longer because they're concerned. So I do have a concern, as many of my peers do, of what's going to happen with sustainability if people want, you know, certain names and certain brands that they feel comfortable with. And that is going to affect some of our local purchasing. I do think that what it has done in the conversation, I was on a CIA Menus of Change.
That's Culinary Institute of America.
Yeah, thank you. I always forget to say that. Yeah. In that conversation, we were talking about, if anything, this should support that we do need more regional food, because if we had more regional food, we would be able to take care of people better in all of the diversity of what we're looking for.
Yeah, because supply chains are getting disrupted.
Correct. It's the trucking. Good morning. Really what's being impacted is the trucking.
Ah, yeah, distribution.
And the distribution of the product. So if it was here regionally, it would be a lot easier. So, I mean, obviously, with us having the ocean nearby, we could serve a lot of fish, but our students don't necessarily eat a lot of fish. They like salmon, but they're not big, a lot of variety in their fish at this point in their lives.
No, we've got all the pork here in Iowa, so
yeah,
you need some sausage, we'll have to send it out your way somehow.
Okay.
Good. I want to take a little time here to mention this is KHOY, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking to Nancy Keller about food and
food service.
And food service and kind of making do, changing things around, and we're still feeding people. My goodness. I want to encourage you to support this fine radio station and find out more about the Donalana Kitchen. You can go to khoifm.org. The Donalana Kitchen show has been on the air for heaven knows how long. We have archives of a lot of old shows. We've got recipes, and you can contact us. Tell us what's on your plate. You can send me an email, Lana Noctigal, and my email is onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. Tell us what's on your plate. Send a recipe. Send a thought. We'd love to hear from you. And now we're going to go back to talk with Nancy, talk about sustainability. Nancy, we get so used to having everything handy. I just picture you with a big, big truckload full of all those little ketchup packages that you have to open by hand. My goodness. Do you have to open small bags now and make them into big piles of food? Or how are you making do with the different ways things are packaged now?
Well, our campus has an approach that we will only use compostable products. So one of the things that we
found
is these PCs are often in foil packages, which of course cannot be composted. And when they go to the trash, it's not the landfill, that doesn't make us happy. So, and we got rid of bottled water a long time ago, so we don't have plastic bottles and things like that. So part of the conversation, we actually went with, and it's been interesting, canned aluminum canned water, kind of like when I had the floods in Ames, Iowa, when we got it from Budweiser. This is Pepsi's version of Aquafina in a can. We bought a lot of canned water. The other thing we did is we had bulk ketchup and we had bulk mustard, and so we were putting all of those into little containers with a lid that were all compostable. But what we found is the company that takes all of our compostable products is now telling us that they're not going to divert any clear compostable products any longer because they can't tell the difference. So between
the corn paste and the plastic. Yeah.
Right. So when they look at the trash, they can't tell if that really is or not. And so now they're telling us that they will only do the paper compostable because that's what their diversion is allowing them to bring at the landfill that they go to. It's not a landfill, but it's where they compost it. So that has been interesting because we actually pulp all of our food waste as well when students' eyes are bigger than their stomach. And now one of the things that's happening as well is that the students are taking their food and taking it to their residence halls to eat it. And now all the trash is in my area where it's getting sorted appropriately. It's in the residence halls and it's all getting thrown into one bag and into the trash. So now the residence halls are running around trying to figure out how to up their game in getting all of these things sorted appropriately and to the right places. So that there is a lot more trash and there is a lot of more products that are not compostable because they potentially are getting them from outside sources now, not from us.
Oh, every time you try to do something good, it just gets complicated, doesn't it?
It does have those days, I tell you.
I think about that when the pandemic first started, restaurants started closing down. And, we support the restaurants by getting takeout food or carry out food. Great idea. But we end up with bags, boxes, individual servings, and they're one-time use. I think we are kind of going backwards. Sometime it's just not going to work out, all the sustainability stuff. The students, too, that you're teaching these classes to, where do they get their groceries?
A lot of them at this point right now are using Instacart, which is one of the online ordering, or they're getting it from Grubhub, which Grubhub is going directly to restaurants and bringing it to them in, you know, one or two meals at a time and delivering it in packaging as well. And those that actually go to the store, you know, obviously the campus prefers that they don't go off campus and interact with other people, or if they do, they definitely do smart social distancing. But there are some stores in town that are giving a 5% discount to our students. And we're going to be doing a food diary with 10 of our students and asking them for $75 for 2 weeks to put down on paper for us where they went, what they bought, did they cook it or did they just buy it already made, how much did they spend, and at what time are they eating? And all critical stuff for me to be able to better serve our customers in the future. But I'd really like to get a good feel.
Research.
We always talk about that. We feel we save students time. We save students from, you know, eating the same thing, which could potentially be ramen, mac and cheese, pizza.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we think that we provide that value to them, but this is an opportunity for us to actually see what that value truly is. And all of my peers are asking for the data when it's done.
And it's only,
you know, I should share with you the one thing that I have the most trouble with right now that I think everyone can relate to. And I have a good amount of people that have sent me their address, is that we have 4 venues that served wine here in Sonoma on campus.
Oh, right. And you're in wine country, and that's part of the curriculum, right?
And so I have a good amount of wine that I'm trying to figure out what to do with. You can only make so much wine vinegar. You could, you know, but we have, we normally do concerts, and because we've been closed all this time, the amount of wine that we normally would have gone through has not gone through. And I am going to, I have about a plethora of wine.
Well, is it bottled and storable, or what's?
It's bottled and storable, but as you know, if you've got white wine that's over 5 years old.
Nancy, this is not going to go on for 5 years. You're not saying that, are you?
No, but what I am saying is that, you know, these people have discerning tastes. And if that wine has been sitting in storage and there's more vintages coming, which this has been a huge bumper crop this year. I'm going to have problems with them wanting the other vintage, not the older vintage. It's a white wine. They may on a red wine, but we'll see. But I am trying to figure out some creative ideas on wine. And a lot of people just sent me their address and said, I'll take it.
Well, should we all have such problems? But yes, because these food supply systems have been stood on their head. Yes, we have problems, and that is one of them. Well, I'm glad that you probably have some takers out there. Good.
Hopefully.
Well, if the you can send us the wine, and we'll send you the pork. Isn't that how it works, Nancy?
Well, it's called fair trade, right?
I like that. Well, people have got to eat. Yes, they do. So speaking of people having to eat, when you get done for cooking for the masses, cooking for the crowds and dealing with all sorts, what sort of things do you like to eat yourself?
What do you eat at home?
You know, I have a garden, and so I like to utilize my garden. So right now I'm spending a lot of time with kale and tomatoes and basil. And tonight I'm making rosemary chicken that, I enjoy. But tacos are a big thing actually at home. My husband and I do, cause we both are working still, even though all the COVID's going on. And so for us, tacos are very simple and easy for us. And that utilizes my tomatoes as well when I make my own pico de gallo. And I have shishito peppers this year, but they have just been acting up. So,
oh well, we've had a good year for shishito peppers in Ames.
See, that must be the latest thing. These peppers show up, and first year I've heard about them, and I've tried some of them. They were pretty nice, yeah. Pretty nice peppers.
I have only three plants, so I mean, I usually like to grill them and then put a little cojita, I'm never saying it right, cheese on it. Yeah.
Cojita.
And then a little salt and pepper, and then off to town I go. So
good. Oh, that makes me want to be in California again. The good Mexican food.
Yep.
Yes. Well, good. Well, I'm glad things are being taken care of well on your campus. It sounds like you're providing a good service to a lot of different people.
Well, it is one of our goals on the campus to support the community. And so it was natural for us to do some of these things.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Well, too bad we can't come and visit you right now. It sounds like a big adventure.
Not right now. Not right now. We're having a hard enough time here in Central Iowa. Yes, we are. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, thank you for being with us today, Nancy. Nancy Keller. She takes care of food and all sorts of stuff.
In Santa Rosa, California.
She takes care of cooking for a university. So there's a lot of hungry students. It's got to be a challenge. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Good, good. I want to remind you that this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and we'll have more Donna Lana Kitchen for you next week. Here on this fine station, farmers markets are still going strong here in Central Iowa, despite our strange weather. We've been in a drought. Yes, we have. There has not been a lot of rain, and we had that derecho that went through. I learned a new word, and a lot of things in Central Iowa got flattened. I still have tomatoes going strong, and there are still people at farmers markets putting up a brave show, and we are glad they are. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We had banjo music today by Bill Emerson. He's playing a tune called Little Juanita. Support KHOI Community Radio. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had fine engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life. Thank you.
Donna Priskintos at the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, and I'm here to ask you kindly to please wear your mask. It is a thoughtful thing to do for other people. It indicates that you're concerned about their health as well as yours, and it's just polite. So I wear my mask, and you could too. Let's get through this together, and be sure to wash your hands with soap and water for 20 seconds.
I'm Jerry, Youth Services Manager at Ames Public Library.
And I'm Kathy, Adult Services Librarian at Ames Public Library.
We would like to invite you to join us each week for Reading Radio.
Our show airs each Wednesday at noon and centers on a different theme each week.
The show starts with stories for our young listeners.
And then includes a conversation with all kinds of recommendations related to our theme.
We hope you'll join us. Happy reading.